And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes as we talk everything related to the New York Giants. Today is the NBA draft, so given that theme, we figured we'd focus on the Giants' incoming rookie class and discuss the impact that this group is going to have on the current roster and team this season. We'll get into perhaps some guys that fall under the radar. And we'll also look big picture over the last few drafts, some steals that the Giants got in the late rounds that all of a sudden became big-time playmakers. So we want to hear from you at 201-939-4513. You can't get to the phone. You can chime in using social media, hashtag Giants Chat. We will get to your calls and we'll get to your tweets throughout the course of the program. And certainly a number of rookies that are going to have opportunities this season, Anita, specifically Eric Flowers, the number one overall pick for the Giants, as he will be slid in to the starting offensive line. And then you look at Landon Collins, too. You know, he also will have an opportunity in the secondary.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was watching the NFL Network, actually a clip of them discussing just overall in regard to the NFL, what offensive player they feel is going to have the biggest impact as a rookie and what defensive player they feel is going to have the biggest impact as a rookie. And Landon Collins is one of those players that was talked about. I want to say the other guy is defensive player that was drafted by the Denver Broncos.
Shane Ray.
So between Shane, the argument on the NFL Network, again, log on to Giants.com. You can see the clip was who's going to have a better season, Shane Ray or Landon Collins. So not only some hefty expectations for Giants fans and the Giants organization, but I think as the NFL as a whole, really looking at Landon Collins coming out of Alabama, working under Nick Saban, understanding kind of that pro-defensive philosophy, Nick Saban getting his players ready, really ready for that transition into the NFL. So I think with all those things and obviously the fact that the Giants needing a big playmaker at the safety position and also Spags, his mentality, his defense, how important the safeties are in his defense plays a huge role in regard to why I think there's some hefty expectations for Landon Collins this year.
And that was one of the things that Spags emphasized when he spoke to the media last week. He talked about how everyone in this defense needs to trust the safeties, as you just alluded to, Anita, and that means a rookie, a veteran. It makes no difference who's back there. There needs to be that trust factor and that communication factor, as Antrell Roll proved over the last few seasons. So Landon Collins and Eric Flowers, to me, have the best opportunity to make an impact on this roster this coming season. It's nothing against the rest of the rookie class, but if you look at who can step in, be a starter, and play all 16 games, Anita, I don't know if you're going to go past the first and the second pick for the Giants this season.
I'm with you. But, you know, one thing that's interesting when it comes to an offensive lineman is how do you really, at the end of the season, how do you really judge, you know, how well an offensive lineman does? You know, how many sacks they give up? Do you go back each and every game and you specifically look at his performance? You know, people typically like to follow the ball. You know what I mean? So you're following the quarterback to the wide receiver or maybe a handoff to the running back as he tries to break tackles. It's kind of, I think it's hard for just the general public and just NFL fans in general just to really gauge how good an offensive lineman does. You've got to go back and look at the stats. And just to see, you know, how many sacks is Eric Flowers giving up at the end of this season? Hopefully none. Realistically, I'll throw this your way. Realistically, how many sacks?
Oh, God.
I mean, you know,
I mean, it's virtually impossible to even start to speculate because.
Yeah,
I guess
what I'm saying is, what are your realistic expectations for him, though?
Well, I mean, I think there's going to be a learning curve. That's my realistic expectation. I don't think you can ever assume a rookie is going to come in year one, play left tackle. And as we talked about, you know, when Beattie got hurt, very few left tackles in college come in year one and start at that position. They normally go to the right side. They understand the philosophy of the offensive line. They get used to the mechanics. It's easier to transition, and then they get moved over to the left side. So Eric Flowers, it's not even uncharted territory within the Giants organization. It's uncharted territory in the NFL. So my expectations are, yes, there's going to be ups and downs for any rookie. You hope that it doesn't happen, but I think you need to be realistic that any young player that is expected to go up against the top defensive pass rushers in the NFL week in and week out, you're going to have your ups and downs. With that being said, I still think there is a way to evaluate his impact by some of the things that you threw out, Anita, such as how many sacks are surrendered and also whether or not the communication of the offensive line is solid over the course of the season. Because, you know, let me ask you this, and I'll throw this out to the Giants fan base. Feel free to weigh in, hashtag Giants chat, 201-939-4513. If there is the most important position on the offensive line, forget rookie, forget veteran, what would you say the most integral part of the offensive line is in terms of evaluating one specific player?
Well, it's a great question. It's a great debate to have because, you know, your left tackle position is arguably the most important position because it protects your quarterback's blind side. Yeah. It's your most athletic player in a sense. You know, it's your strongest. It's the money player, pretty much. You know what I mean? But some would argue the center. Some would argue, you know, Richburg. Weston Richburg, because your center is kind of the quarterback of all five guys. You know, he's the middle linebacker when it comes to the offense and that offensive line. He's you know, communicating. Eli's calling an audible. He's looking up. He's letting the rest of the guys know where the Mike linebacker is because, you know, and trying to read a defense, it's the first thing you want to pinpoint is where is that Mike linebacker? Where is he lining up on the field? What are you expecting him to do and build off there? So I think some would argue the center position, but I think the obvious one that most people will immediately say is left tackle. But I think that you can make a solid argument for the center position.
I would agree with you. I think those would be the two. If I had to pick two, I'd focus on those two. I'd lean a little bit towards left tackle only because, Anita, normally the left tackle gets matched up with the best pass rusher on the opposing team. And like you said, the importance of protecting your quarterback's blind side. So that's why I'm going to throw my focus a little bit more to left tackle. But the center position, I think, is key. And it's important to note, while Richburg's not a rookie, you also have a young player at the center position this season. You have a young player at center. You also have a young player at left tackle. And that's why I say, you know, would be unfair to put all the pressure on Eric Flowers' shoulders to determine the success rate of the offensive line, because I think you have so many new players in different positions this season that, you know, it's going to take some time for everybody to get on the same page. That's why training camp is going to be so important to maintain health and also maintain continuity. But Flowers can have an impact without getting so caught up in the numbers and the breakdowns and how many sacks, just based on what you see in the early stages of the season and need out of this offensive line. Because he'll help, you hope, in terms of improving the running game, which is a big part of the Giants' focus this offseason, getting back to the philosophy and the factors that worked so well for them in previous seasons, winning that identity battle in the trenches, and then also in terms of giving Eli Manning plenty of time to get rid of the football, whether it be in terms of short passes or long passes. So I think based on those performances, Anita, how the offense flows, you know, that is a reflection on how Eric Flowers will perform.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think it's a great decision to move Pugh to that left guard position to play next to Eric Flowers, because I think these two guys are going to be a great 1-2 punch, you know, for the next few years to come. And in the years that I covered the Miami Dolphins, you had Richmond Webb and Keith Sims, who that 1-2 punch, that tackle and guard position, protected Dan Marino for years and years. And it's so important for them to start, you know, creating that chemistry together. So I like that move. We just talked about Richburg. Big expectations for him. So now you've got those three positions, you know, from the center to the left side of your line down. Now, obviously, with Beattie out for a number of games, that's a huge hit to this offensive line. You know, as we've been talking about, really I guess the game plan going in was to have Flowers start at the right tackle position, and then who knows, eventually work his way to the left tackle position, but thrown right into the firing pan and having to step up and play that tackle position on the left side is going to be a tall task. What happens now? You know, again, I've been talking about it, I'm sure, with you as well as Paul Dottino. As of right now, if the season was to start tomorrow, my money would be on Jeff Schwartz starting at the right tackle position. He can play tackle. I think he's the best tackle on this team right now. So what does that mean in regard to the guard position? That's really the big question mark. And you know, no disrespect to Marshall Newhouse, but, you know, he wasn't brought in from Cincinnati to start. He was brought in to be that sixth, seventh guy off the line. So you know, that's really where the concern is. But you've got to feel comfortable and you've got to feel confident that, you know, that left side of the line from center on out is pretty solid. And you've got to really be very excited about the future with these three guys playing together. They're young and they're going to create really great chemistry.
Well, each of those three players you invested a draft pick in each of the last 3 years. So you're 100% right. You know, if they could play next to each other for years to come, that could be certainly a solid part of the Giants roster. We are talking about the Giants rookie class today in honor of it being the NBA draft. Want to hear from you.
By the way, are you a big Knicks fan, by the way?
I'm not necessarily a huge Knicks fan. I'm a big NBA fan.
Obviously. Are you what team is your team?
I'm a Bulls fan. That's my
Chicago Bulls.
Yes,
okay. All right, that's cool. So really I know this is a football show, but since this is kind of in honor of the draft tonight. There's so much talk about what Phil Jackson's going to do with that number four pick. What's your gut telling you? If Russell's gone, Okafor's gone, Towns is gone, what do you think Phil does?
Well, I mean, I think they could look at trading down as one option, perhaps getting a few picks back, or they could perhaps go the route of taking one of those European players who certainly has slowly worked up the charts. I think the good position for them is there's going to be a number of options. You could, I'm sure, have interest in somebody who wants to move up, and at the same time, you can still get a quality player, whether or not be a European player. You have Manuel Mudiay, who will probably be on the board, who is a very good point guard that was expected to go to SMU but went overseas last season. He obviously has the size to play the point guard position, and the Knicks are certainly in need of that. So, I mean, I think they'll be in a position where they can explore, which is not a bad position to be in.
I'd like to see if Okafor and Russell, those are the two guys that I'd love to see land on the Knicks. Both of them are gone, right? I would love to see Phil trade down and get Cauley-Stein at a later position. That's, you know, so first Russell, second Okafor, and then if not there, trade down to get Cauley-Stein.
I'm expecting all three of those guys to be off the board. I'd be very surprised if one of them is around, especially Okafor and Towns. I'm expecting them to go one and two, but that's what makes the draft, just like in the NFL, extremely interesting. The game of speculation will continue. We're focusing on the Giants rookie class.
Sorry,
today. Had to throw
in a little
NBA tidbit
here and there. Tonight's a big night.
Correct.
We had to touch on it for at least a hot second.
Absolutely. We're focusing on the Giants rookie class. We want to hear from you in terms of who do you think is going to make the biggest impact on this roster, who could perhaps be a sleeper, somebody that nobody is expecting to maybe make some noise on the roster this season and could come to fruition. And we'll also look back at some previous drafts, looking at some players who were in the late rounds and actually wound up making a rather noticeable impact on this team. Let's open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513. Max is in New York City. Max, what's happening?
Hey, how are you guys?
Doing well, Max. What do you got for us?
I need to know. Worries. We love the NBA today. Who cares about the NFL now? No. But I have a couple questions. One is, this year, who do you see having the bigger impact, Odigizawa or Bromley?
Well, I think that they're both going to be in the rotation because Spags does like to utilize a variety of defensive linemen. In terms of statistics, is that where you're going, or you're going with just who perhaps moves
playmaker?
The pile?
Are you going?
And
are you
so
going
forth?
Stats? Or are you going playmaker?
I was just more going, I guess, just impact, like time on the field. Who's going to have a like? Who's going to be in, you know, a bigger part of their respective rotation?
I would lean towards the double O. That's where I would go at this point. I think Jay Bromley, though, is going to get a lot more playing time than he did last season, because of the fact that obviously they have a number of defensive tackles that they plan to rotate throughout the course of this season. And Bromley was groomed all of last season to get more used to the speed and the style of NFL play. But right now, as it stands, I would lean towards the double O seeing a little bit more time on the field.
Okay. And also, I know they might get outbid, but any word on Mathis potentially, now that I've heard that they're more comfortable moving towards the tackle, that would open up a guard spot? Any word on potentially interest in Mathis?
Well, Well, keep in mind, Evan Mathis was a left guard with Philadelphia. He didn't play the right guard position. Not that he doesn't have versatility, but I think you need to at least keep that in perspective if you're going to move guys around on the right side. As far as reports and everything, it's simply reports and speculation at this point. I mean, the Giants certainly don't comment on who they're talking to or who they may be looking at, but he's still very much a free agent, as he was a few weeks ago.
Really quick, I just want to comment on this tweet. This is from Giants Nation. He tweeted, Jeff Schwartz is not even a consideration at right tackle. He's already made it clear he's a right guard. That is inaccurate. I had an opportunity to talk to Jeff Schwartz during OTAs and, of course, at minicamp, and he's willing to play any position possible. And right now, Jeff Schwartz is the best right tackle on this roster, period. So, you know, he'll play right tackle if he has to. He's confident that he can, and he's open to it if that's really what the Giants want him to do. Obviously, I don't think it's what the Giants want him to do. I think the Giants would like to keep him at guard and find a solid right tackle that could come in and play well for them this season. But if that doesn't happen, again, this is just my opinion, by the way, in regard to who I think would be the best right tackle on the team. So it's just my opinion. Giants haven't really said anything.
And appreciate the phone call, Max. Thanks so much for chiming in. The tweeter may be alluding to, I know Schwartz did speak to the media during the course of an OTA workout or perhaps very early in minicamp. I'm going to lean towards OTA. I don't remember the date. And when he was pressed by the media, he did say that as of right now, they have me penciled in as a right guard. That doesn't mean that he's not open to playing other positions, but at this point, they envision him at least at the right guard. Could things change in training camp? Listen, anything could very well happen, but I think at this point, the goal is to try to identify in either the five players at their respective positions so that they can avoid having that game of musical chairs, which unfortunately has been a routine over the last few seasons, mainly because of injuries. You know, they've been moving guys around, and you can't necessarily say, well, on July 1st, this is where we're going to put him, and then all of a sudden, August 15th, you suffer an injury, you need to move a player around. So I think this year going in, let's have five players, let's pencil them in at specific positions, and let's hope, obviously, we can keep them there because continuity is so important on the offensive line. It doesn't matter whether you have rookies. It doesn't matter whether you have a full slate of veterans. You need players to play next to one another continuously, week in and week out, practice in and practice out. And as a result of the injury bug over the last few seasons, they weren't afforded that luxury. So that's at least the game plan heading into the season.
And then what's really going to be interesting is when Beattie does return from that pectoral muscle. You know, what a great problem to have, you know, when your former starting left tackle is ready to rejoin the team week 10, right? Is that what we're anticipating?
Well, they're saying 5 to 6 months. So obviously it really depends on how the rehab process goes. But I would assume we're looking at probably
right
early
after the, maybe right after the bye. Right
that
after
would
the
be
bye?
Around the time.
So
at
Washington, the Jets, at Miami, Carolina, at Minnesota, Philadelphia. So.
Well, keep in mind, David Deal's been hurt in the past, and then he's returned as sort of a swing tackle. You know, there is really no exact script that the Giants have followed when a main offensive lineman has missed time, whether or not that offensive lineman returns automatically to his position. Do they slowly move him along? Does he come back and he's sort of a rotational player? I think there's a variety of ways they can go with that.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, you do have that NFL, that philosophy, like player doesn't lose his starting job to injury, but, you know, the offensive line is a totally different animal, you know, because you're right. I mean, you're talking about, like, consistency. You're talking about chemistry. You're talking about gelling together. And the offensive line as a unit is one whole player in a sense. And if this offensive line has success for the first 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 weeks, it will be interesting to see how the Giants then utilize Beattie when he does return.
Well, it goes back to chemistry, you know? As you mentioned. I think that will dictate perhaps what happens with Beattie. If the line is playing well together, you know, those are some of the things you need to weigh. Do we want to disrupt the continuity of the O-line? If you want to do that and you just want to go back to the best player available, perhaps obviously you try to slide back in Beattie. But I think right now at this point, the goal is get him healthy and get him to a point where he's ready to obviously deal with the physicality in the NFL. And at this point, we are months away from that coming to fruition. Let's throw in a couple of tweets here before we get back to the lines. Number of people weighing in into the conversation on many fronts, especially with respect to the O-line as well as some of the defensive linemen. In terms of the defensive line, we were talking about Double O, how much playing time he could get. Joe at JCS 0-2008 says, Odighi Zua could be critical this year if Ayers can't stay healthy and Moore doesn't develop. You're going to see rotation regardless of how those other two players that Joe threw out perform this season, because Spags likes to rotate players. He likes to keep them fresh come the fourth quarter. So I would say all of them are important in terms of what they're going to potentially bring to the table.
I will say this, like, Double O, like, just his physique and, like, I mean, he just doesn't look like a rookie to me, right? I mean, when you look at, like, when you look at him,
he's built.
I mean, he's so strong, and he's so, like, he just doesn't come across as a rookie to me. He looks like somebody who's been in the league for quite a while now, like, based on his stature and his physique, and he just, I think the sky's the limit for him. I'm really excited to see him in pads and play in this preseason and training camp and preseason games. I'm really excited to see what he can do.
Well, and I think the Giants like his versatility, Anita, the fact that he can play inside and outside. That's the benefit to someone like that. That's why when the caller, Max, brought up, you know, who do you see having more playing time, Jay Bromley or the Double O? The reason why I give the Double O the edge right now is because, unlike Bromley, you can move him outside and inside.
Right.
Bromley, you know, is a defensive tackle. You're going to play him inside. We could see Odighi Zua lined up on the outside as an edge rusher. He could be inside in terms of the old NASCAR package. I think the sky is the limit.
Mm-hmm.
Not the limit, I should say, basically. You could go even past the sky, the stratospheres, if you want to take it to a whole other degree, in terms of how you can play him on the field. You could get very creative. One other tweet I want to throw out related to the offensive line that we were talking about earlier, Ben and Big Ben Z, underscore Z, excuse me, left tackle and center are neck and neck for importance for me. Center calls protections, left tackle with the blind side, center is underrated. And that was one of the things that obviously we were talking about earlier in the program. We'll continue to get to more of your tweets. Let's head back to the phone lines and check in with Abdul in Minneapolis. Abdul, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
How are we doing, Abdul?
I think this year is really interesting because we have two rookies are playing really important positions on both sides of the ball. Collins is going to be really key, calling up, you know, as a safety in both run protection and coverage. And you have Flowers at left tackle. And it's going to be really, really interesting seeing how these young kids react to all this pressure and responsibility put placed on them. It's very unlike rookies to have all this much pressure and placed on their shoulders. And hopefully they could respond well. And I'm really excited for this year's more so than most years. I'm really excited for training camp this year because there's so many young players out there. You know, as you mentioned, Odighi Zua on defense, Collins on safety, Flowers, you know, at tackle, to see how these guys are going to react once the pads are put on. And I need to figure out a way to get MSG in Minneapolis because all your coverage on Giants on MSG. So you need to hook me up somehow, okay?
I do. I just want to make a comment in regard to what you said in regard to the rookies. One thing that I don't think is talked about enough is, yes, you've got Flowers at the rookie position. At the left tackle position as a rookie, but he has arguably one of the best offensive line coaches in the NFL in Flats. And then with Collins, Coach Merritt is really fantastic. And is going to take this young man underneath his wing. He, in my opinion, he's one of the best DB coaches that I've come across. And then on top of that, you know, to be working in Spags' defense, I think bodes well for both of these young guys. And I don't think enough is really talked about in regard to the position coaches and what a big role they play in grooming these young rookies in their first season. And they're both under fantastic tutelage in regard to their position coaches. Just FYI.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm quietly and hopefully confident that I know there'll be some roadblocks. I know I will see, you know, Towers get beaten, Flowers get beaten occasionally. But I think hopefully he'll be okay. My kind of sleeper rookie, it's kind of my pet project, is this guy, Akeem Nix, who's from Purdue. I keep bringing him up because I think he has so much talent. Do you think that they could use him kind of like a Randall Cobb? Because I know he had over 100 catches at Purdue. And he kind of has that speed and shift as Cobb did. You know, Cobb, when he first came out, played running back and receiver at Green Bay, which McAdoo was out. I was wondering, you think, also I heard that now Sue Harris has a knee problem, so he may not, you know, be able to compete, you know, come training camp. If Cobb might be used not only as a running back, but as a receiver, so you could, you know, did you guys see that at all?
Well, here's the thing you need to consider, Abdul. You have Shane Vereen, and Shane Vereen is probably going to be utilized as a wide receiver too. I wouldn't necessarily compare him to Randall Cobb, but Vereen is the type of player, based on how he was utilized in New England and based on what McAdoo did with running backs going back to his Green Bay days, where you're going to put him in the slot and you're going to line him up as a wide receiver to give you perhaps four wide receivers across the board. Yeah. So when I look at opportunity, I'm not saying that you're off in terms of how perhaps you can envision Akeem Hunt being utilized, but if I'm the depth chart right now and I'm looking over the depth chart for the Giants, am I going to try to make time for Akeem Hunt at the sacrifice of Shane Vereen? I think you need to ask yourself that in terms of how you look at how they're going to utilize these playmakers.
Well, we'll see, you know, when the pads come on. If he just jumps out and makes such freaking plays, you know, plays, he may have to force himself, you know, force that discussion. My last question is, why don't we see trades in the NFL? We have, you know, arguably kind of a surplus in receiver and tight end, and even maybe backup quarterback. Why can't we parlay that and maybe trading for a right guard, a right tackle? Like, why isn't that a viable option?
Yeah, who are you going to trade?
You know, I'm saying once training camp starts and we say, you know, you have someone like Washington, you know, who's our fifth receiver, you know, who, you know, that might help another team. Combine that with maybe a Nassib, you know, or the third quarterback, and parlay that into getting a decent right tackle. Like, well, I'm not saying it's a possible, you know, I'm not saying, but no one ever even discussed that as an option. Like, and in other sports, that'd be the number one option.
Yeah, you know, like, but I don't. A few things there. Number one, I don't think a team is going to give you a starting right tackle for your.
I'm talking just a decent right tackle. Right now, we don't have that. You know, besides, we don't have that. Newhouse is not that. We need someone who's just decent right now.
I understand that. I'm just saying, like, I don't think you know Corey Washington is going to have to battle just to make this team. So, you know, to trade him, I don't, you know, there's no really huge value in the market. And just to make a comment about Nassib, like, you know, I hope Giants fans, and I don't know how you possibly can, because we really don't see a lot from Nassib, because Eli Manning is, like, you know, the unbreakable man, and he never gets injured, thank God. But Nassib is really good. Let me just finish. You know, I don't, because Eli never gets injured, you know, I don't think, you look across the league at all 32 teams and their quarterback goes down, you know, how many of them, their season is over? I honestly believe, and God forbid, you know, that if Eli was to go down, Nassib could come in and Nassib could still make this team competitive. You don't want to trade Nassib because this is the NFL. They're not out there playing tiddlywinks. They're tackling each other. And there's very few teams in the NFL that could honestly say, well, if their quarterback goes down, they're not out of it.
I guess my point is, how come no one ever discusses trading as a path to get another player in the NFL? That very rarely comes up. It's always, we'll pick up people who get cut. Or, you know, free agency. Trade is never looked at as a viable option, and I'm wondering why that is.
Well, Abdul, I think to answer your question based on other sports, it has a lot to do with the salary cap and the fact that there's not a great deal of flexibility in the salary cap when you look at the NFL compared to some other sports. And rookie contracts and undrafted players are so valuable because they don't eat up a lot of cap space. So if you're talking about a hypothetical where you'd want to part ways with two players who are on rookie contracts in order to acquire a veteran, the team that's going to acquire the veteran now has to have the necessary salary cap space to absorb that contract, whereas the team that then is getting the two younger players all of a sudden gets a little bit more flexibility. So I think at the end of the day, the reason why we don't see many trades in the NFL, it has to do probably more so with the salary cap than any other reason compared to some of the other sports.
That makes sense. All right, thanks, guys.
You got it, Abdul. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. Most of the trades that you see normally happen around the trade deadline, which is a few weeks into the season, and
they're normally big-time players, and you're trading for a first or second-round draft pick for a big time. Nobody's going to trade for Corey Washington. I you know what? I do believe that somebody would trade for Nassib. I do believe that. But again, go down all 32 teams and ask yourself, if this quarterback goes down, is their season done? And the majority of them, I think it's safe to say that 70 or 75% of them, their season is done. And, you know, call me crazy, but, you know, based on, like, everything I hear about Nassib, from the refs that are here on Thursdays when they scrimmage, to the coaching staff, to the players, Nassib has continually gotten better and better and better. He knows this system extremely well. He's athletic. He throws the ball well, scrambling. Like, you know, and I think there's very few teams in the NFL that have that luxury, that have that number two quarterback, that God forbid anything happens to their starting quarterback, boom, next man up. I'm not saying Nassib is as good as Eli Manning. I'm not at all. But at least you've got a guy that can step up, knows the system, plays well in the system, knows the players, knows the coaches, and can compete and possibly win more football games for you.
And it's similar to what he ran in Syracuse. That's why the comfort zone is there compared to the previous offense that the Giants ran. Let's head back to the lines. We check in with Marco in Connecticut. Marco, what's happening?
Hey, Lance and Anita. How are you today?
Great.
Doing well, Marco. What do you have for us?
Just some O-line talk with you. I was wondering, when preseason starts, when training camp starts, how does it work with PUP? I anticipate Will Beattie going on PUP, but can a team place more than one player on PUP?
Yeah, you can place more than one, but once that player starts practicing, it's ineligible to put that player on PUP. So as long as the player hasn't done anything, once you start training camp, you're fine. But if the player takes part in anything, then you do no longer have an option to put that player on PUP.
Okay. So now that leads me to my next question. You have a player who goes on PUP to start training camp. When training camp is – and then they could come off PUP at any time during training camp. But when training camp is over, if the team is going to place that player on PUP, how does that differ from short-term IR?
Well, it's two separate lists. There's the preseason PUP and the regular season PUP. So you could basically transition a player from one list to the other. Short-term IR is that new rule that they allowed where you could put all you want. You could put plenty of players on injured reserve, but you can only designate one player to return at a certain point over the course of the season. For example, the Giants last year had Jeff Schwartz go down in the preseason. You can't put him on PUP because he already took part in practices and preseason games. Your only right. option is to put him on IR, but you still obviously want him to make an impact. So therefore, you designate him as the one player that can return from IR. That was the case with Jeff Schwartz last season.
Okay. So what we know about Beattie's injury is that we're looking around, you just discussed it, about week 10. So Beattie would not be a short-term IR. He would more be a PUP. Is that correct?
Well, I think it depends on who else perhaps they have to put on IR and who else they would be weighing that could potentially return. Remember, the other thing you need to keep in mind, Marco, when you're looking at the PUP list, there is an expiration date in terms of how long you can keep a player on PUP. Off the top of my head, I have to look at the specifics. I think it's 6 weeks, and then after that 6 weeks, you then have maybe like a week or two to do something with that player. So if you feel that it's better to keep Beattie on short-term IR because it gives you more flexibility with the rehab process, you put them on short-term IR. If you feel that you can still buy yourself some time with PUP, you put them on PUP. I think that is also going to play a factor in terms of what lists you eventually decide on determining where you want to select Beattie on.
Well, okay, and the reason I'm asking is because I know right now the major injury we're dealing with is Beattie, besides a few nicks with some other players. Beattie is the one player that can fall into some of these categories. But without training camp having started yet, my concern is the team having to be forced to make a decision on Beattie, like a premature decision to possibly shut him down, because something else comes up in camp. And what I'm thinking about is, like, you know, obviously a starter or a main contributing player such as, you know, like a Tremaine McBride or a Reuben Randall. Larry Donnell comes to mind too. You know, that's something to keep your eye on about that Achilles, you know, little injury or something that has
But Marco, I don't mean to cut you off. I think you're really getting ahead of yourself with Larry Dinell. I wouldn't be overly concerned about that. The reason is, I mean, we've got a month before training camp starts, and he could very well be good to go. I don't think they're envisioning that being something that's going to eat into training camp. So I would say we may want to hold back in terms of trying to find the spot for Larry Dinell. I understand your point about, you know, maybe the dilemma what you do with Beedy, but keep this in mind. You could keep Beedy on PUP throughout the entire length of training camp, and then when you're finalizing your 53-man roster, then you determine what you want to do with Beedy. It's not as if they have to put Beedy on IR once training camp starts, and then you're like, oh my God, what are we going to do? We should have kept him on PUP. They can wait that out. So I don't really think they're in a position where they have their backs against the wall on that.
Okay. All right. I understand that. And Brett Jones, the center from Canada, is he an eligible player possibly for the practice squad?
Off the top of my head, I know that they tweaked some of the rules entering this season. I'll try to look up the specifics before we end the show. I'm going to say yes, that he is eligible for the practice squad because they did add two additional roster spots. I know this happened a year ago where you can have a player that has at least logged two full seasons or near that and can go on the roster, and he hasn't logged anything in terms of NFL play. So I'm most certain that Brett Jones would be eligible to go on the practice squad.
Okay. Well, I've looked at the roster, and I've had some fun with bringing it down to 53 guys. It's definitely not an easy task at this point in the year, considering training camp hasn't started yet. I do have Brett Jones as one of the offensive linemen making the team. He's one of nine players, with Beedy being the PUP player. But obviously things need to happen in training camp, and we will see where that goes. But if he's a practice squad eligible player, I think that gives the team a little more flexibility.
Well, those are going to be some of the decisions they're going to have to make as we near the start of the season, Marco, and appreciate the phone call. Already locking down the 53-man roster, Anita. Boy, I tell you, some Giants fans, they are very passionate.
You know, I've said this before. You know, when you look around the league in regard to certain positions, there's going to be other teams in the NFL that are very deep at the offensive line position. There's going to be teams that are very, very deep at the safety position, and they're going to be forced to cut a player that potentially could be, you know, a backup or even a starter on somebody else's roster. So I guess what I'm saying is you know, based on the needs in regard to the depth, the offensive line position and the safety position for this Giants team, don't be surprised if a player who's on somebody else's roster right now ends up at the Giants on September 13th. I'm not saying they'd be starting, but you know, I don't think it'd be a big surprise. Because, you know, I mean, every team has a lot of depth at certain positions.
I can certainly see that happening.
It's a numbers game.
I absolutely agree with you on that. But I always bring up every season when we sort of have the conversation, somebody may be cut last minute and the Giants can make a roster move, that, you know, you can't overlook the value of having a player in camp, having a player during OTAs, digesting the system, understanding what Spags does, because they're going to be way ahead of the game. Regardless, Anita, if you bring in a veteran who is well-polished and well-seasoned, I understand that perhaps the transition is going to be easy, but I still give the advantage to the player that's been in camp the entire time because they've actually had an opportunity to work with the other players who they're going to be out on the field during the season.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, but if there's another team that has so much depth at the safety position or so much depth at the offensive line position that they let a player go that potentially has more athleticism, better skill set, can contribute, you know, more so than the last guy on your roster in that position, in that core, you know, I think you've got to weigh it out and say, okay, well, this player hasn't been here through OTAs or training camp, but, you know, maybe just, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks down the line, you know, he's really going to contribute in a big way to this team.
Well, there were two examples you could go based on last season. Israel Adonijé came in late. He ultimately did not make the team. And the other example I throw out is Adam Snyder, the veteran offensive lineman who was cut. He was also brought in. He also dealt with some injuries, so he didn't really have an impact on this roster. But those are examples of polished veterans who were brought in and had an opportunity to make the roster. I want to follow up on Marco's question about the practice squad. I was looking up while we were going back and forth some of the regulations just to throw out there. And Brett Jones, now that I look at it, should be eligible because at this point you have a maximum of two spots on the practice squad for players with no more than two accrued seasons. So he has not accrued anything when it comes to the NFL. And to have an accrued season, you have to be active for at least six regular season games. That is what the equivalent of an accrued season is when determining whether or not somebody is eligible for the practice squad. So Brett Jones at this point looks very good in terms of being eligible, just to answer your question.
I know that, you know, really hasn't been any hitting or contact because of none of that is allowed until training camp. So, you know, to get a fair assessment in regard to what he's looked like. But what are your thoughts in regard to what you've seen, what you've heard from the coaches? What's realistic expectation for him this season?
We're talking about Brett Jones?
Yeah.
Well, I think that he brings versatility to the table because he did play a few positions when he was in Canada. The transition, and Brett Jones has talked about this, he's got to learn that now all of a sudden the defensive linemen are a little bit closer to you compared to where he was in the CFL. So I look at him as the equivalent of a rookie. And I understand by definition he's a rookie, but he's played a little bit more in terms of professional football. He's going to have his ups and downs during training camp, especially when they do put the pads on and even the defensive linemen get a little bit more physical. Realistic expectations, not necessarily looking at him as a starter, but I think he brings value to the table as a versatile backup who can learn the guard position, who can learn the center position on this level, and in a pinch could very well be plugged in. But I wouldn't necessarily say that the expectations are through the roof where he's going to battle perhaps for a starting job at the end of the day this season. But as we know, based on the injury bug, you can never have enough options behind your five regular starters because, unfortunately, the Giants have dealt with their fair share of injuries on the O-line. Let's head back to the phone lines, and speaking of Brett Jones, I'm sure Mark in Floral Park wants to weigh in, according to what I'm seeing on our rundown. Mark, what's happening?
Hi, how you doing, guys? Somebody stole my thunder there, but that's okay.
Not a problem.
I was just hoping, how good is he supposed to be? Is he a top-notch prospect from Canada, or just a guy that they signed for depth?
Well, he was voted as one of the top offensive linemen in the CFL.
I think the top, right?
Correct. So you're talking about somebody that made an impact where he played before he came to the NFL. Now, What does that translate to the NFL, Mark? I mean, that's a very good question. We're not going to be able to tell until the pads go on and you actually see a little bit more physicality. Right now, it's more of him transitioning to the language, the X's and O's, where to line up, the communication with the quarterback. Once the pads go on, then I think you can take the next step in terms of how he truly will slide into an NFL system.
Yeah, I guess the time will tell. We'll have to wait on that, I guess. But I want to ask you, too, about Jarrell Jernigan, the wide receiver. He's a free agent, correct?
Correct.
He was a really good player. He developed into a really good receiver the last couple of years. He got hurt last year. He, like, sprained his foot in week two, and then he was on the IR after a sprained foot. What was that all about?
Well, he had to deal with a number of injuries, as you just hit on. I mean, that was his biggest obstacle while he was here with the Giants. There were times where he flashed, and unfortunately, just when the opportunity arose, he'd get hurt again. He was very in and out of the lineup.
Yeah, I really hate to let players that are productive go. He's a free agent now, correct?
He's still on the market.
I mean, he wasn't, like, when his number was called, he wasn't always productive. However, I will say this, in his defense, you know, he played under Gilbride's system, which was a very difficult system to play in, I think, for any player who plays offense. So I think it'd be interesting to see him in McAdoo's system. I think it would be very different for him. You know, I mean, unfortunately, we won't see it. But it's an interesting situation to kind of ponder in regard to how good would Jernigan have been in this system.
Right. I guess there's no chance he's coming back then because nobody signed him. Is he healthy?
He is still on the market. I don't know enough about his health info right now, Mark. It would be basically pure speculation. I do know with certainty he is still on the market. In terms of whether or not he could return to the Giants, I think in order to answer that question, you got to look at the current depth chart. You know, Who are you going to part ways with, and who do you see him pushing out of the depth chart right now? I think there's a lot of depth at that position that the Giants are fairly content with what they have.
Thing is, you got the big three. You got Randall, and you got Beckham, and you got, you know, Victor Cruz coming back, hopefully. And who knows, you know?
Also, with Jernigan, you know, if you recall, if you're not the number one or number two wide receiver on this roster, you're expected to play special teams, and I don't think Jernigan really delivered in regard to special teams. I mean,
he does return punts, no?
He fumbled the ball quite often.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you know, that's something. It's part of the job description. You know, if you're not Odell Beckham Jr., you're not Victor Cruz. Sorry, sir, you're going to have to play special teams and you're going to have to deliver and step up. And unfortunately, I don't think Jernigan really delivered at the expectation that I think the Giants were expecting.
I just hate to waste third round picks, you know, the same as with Hosley in the secondary. No one's talking about him either.
Well, Hosley's still on the roster, though, Mark, and
the opportunity's
there, because after Tremaine McBride, you know, there are questions about who may assume that backup slot corner role or who may provide additional depth on the outside. Hosley's going to have an opportunity. Now, I wouldn't necessarily look at it as you're wasting a third-round pick. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of competition in the NFL, and just because a player was drafted at a certain spot doesn't mean that they're penciled in to give them, you know, X amount of years on a team or in this league. I think you always bring in players that are undrafted or veterans to provide competition, and may the best man win. I mean, that has to be the viewpoint of every single team in the NFL.
Is there a chance Hosley can play free safety?
That, I think, would be tough, given his size. You know, Hosley's not a very big guy. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't be a small guy and play safety. Earl Thomas is not a huge presence, and he is one of the best safeties in the league for the Seattle Seahawks, but I don't envision the Giants trying to transition him. I think Shockey Brown makes more sense to move him to the safety position, and Bennett Jackson, who already has made the transition.
Yeah, I think, and this is going to be one of the most, I think, interesting and exciting competitions this training camp, and through the preseason games, is Nat Burhey and Bennett Jackson. Really, I mean, the two of them are very tight. They're good friends, and they're going to be battling it out for that other starting safety position. So that's going to be fun to watch. Those are the two guys.
Safety, you know, they got the guy from Alabama that drafted. That was a great pick. All the other guys are just a bunch of guys trying to prove themselves. I'm afraid we're talking 6 and 10 again here. It really worries me.
Well, sometimes that's not a bad thing, Mark. I appreciate the phone call. And what I mean by that, it's not a bad thing that players are unproven and they're hungry, because that means they're going out there and they know that their roster spots are not guaranteed. And it's not like veterans who may take their jobs for granted. So that, I think, is going to bring out a great deal of competition. And I have said this quote time and time again, and I will continue to emphasize it. Now, he has to get on the field. Anita just alluded to Nat Burhey. Nat Burhey had some very interesting quotes.
And he's dealing with a calf injury. Absolutely.
That's exactly why he's sidelined. But he had some very interesting quotes when he spoke to the media before he dealt with that calf injury. And one of the things that was irritating him, at least, and I'm only reading into that based on his interaction with the media, you know, a lot of people were saying, you know, there's too many young guys in the mix, Anita. There's unproven commodities. And Nat Burhey's answer to the media was, I would not be on the roster if I couldn't play. You know, that to me was one of his money quotes. He has a chip on his shoulder. He's hungry. He's motivated. The next thing that Nat Burhey needs to do is get on the field and practice every day. And the goal is that will happen in training camp. But this group as a whole, they're hungry, this safety group. And I think that could mean that they're very dangerous from that perspective.
Yeah, you know, my biggest concern is the role that the safety position plays with Spags and his defense. And you've heard a lot of analysts talk about how important that safety position is, and the fact that he does have some young guys there. And this is going to be a learning curve. I'm more concerned about that. I do believe it's going to be Burhey. I do believe that your starting safeties come September 13th against the Dallas Cowboys is going to be Landon Collins and Burhey. I do believe that. I think Bennett Jackson is going to really provide some nice competition there, but more so, what concerns me more in regard to who's going to win the battle is how the safety position transitions and relates to Spags' defense and the importance, the role that they play in it, and the learning curve that's going to have to be accelerated before September 13th.
Lance Beto, Anita Marks with you here on Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll get to some more of your tweets in a moment. Right now, let's head back to the lines. Len is in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey,
doing
Len.
Well, good. Glad to be on the show today. I want to go back to the beginning of the show when you were talking about most important player on the offense. Am I in the right ballpark with that? That's what you were talking about, wasn't it?
Well, we were most talking important. About the rookie class, the rookie, biggest impact, and we also got into the offensive line a little bit.
Okay, okay. Because I was going to make it – I thought it was broader than that, and I was going to say, in my opinion, the most important person on the offense on any team is the quarterback. And all you need to do is look at the salaries of the quarterback and the cap hits of the quarterback to indicate to you. I mean, these coaches are general managers and owners. I mean, they know what they're doing. They know who the most important person is on the offense. And, you know, in my opinion, it's clearly the quarterback. Comment on the offensive line. I think you guys were beginning to sound a little resigned to our fate. And let me put it in a little different terms. I think we've got four legitimate NFL starters on this team. I don't know what word you want to use, quality, decent, whatever. I don't think we've got a fifth starter on this roster. In fact, I think we've got a heck of a battle going on for the eighth and ninth offensive lineman position on this squad. Now, maybe we could make a case for a heck of a competition for the first tackle off the bench, the first guard off the bench, the first center off the bench. But I'm worried.
Well,
Lynn,
I will say this. I will say this. I think you're right with the first part of your analysis. I think you're right. I think this team has four solid starters on the offensive line. Yes, they are missing one. What happens there? I mean, we know that Jake Long came in for a visit. You know, I don't know what happens maybe, you know, 2 months from now, where hopefully his knee continues to heal. You know, it's not like, you know, there are other teams in the NFL that picked him up and signed him, because obviously he's still healing from that knee issue. There's a chance Jake Long does end up on this roster at the end of the day. But to say the seventh, that there's a battle for the seventh or eighth offensive line position. No, Marshall Newhouse was signed to come in to be the sixth person off the bench. I get that. And I think that's a solid role for him. I think he knows that. I think he realizes that. Keep in mind also, like, he knows the system. He played under McAdoo.
He was a starter with the Green Bay.
Okay. Yeah. There's an added dimension there for Newhouse as well.
Give me a chance to respond to that. Marshall Newhouse wasn't brought in here to be a starter. And I think we're all cringing right now. Every listener out there should be cringing. We're thinking about Marshall Newhouse as a starter. This guy failed in two other places as a starter. He's not going to miraculously become an NFL starter. It's just, Anita, it's just not going to happen.
No, this, nobody's arguing. Lynn, nobody's arguing. Lynn, nobody's arguing with you about it.
What you're saying is we're going to have to stick somebody out there at right back. Yeah, I mean, that's the case. Now, maybe if we think John Jerry is the fifth guy, then maybe Schwartz goes out to right tackle, that kind of thing. We're short a fifth guy. And listen, we are not – Lance, here I go again. We're not going to beat Philadelphia and Dallas, and maybe not even Washington, with leftovers from other teams. We're just not going to do it.
Well, Len, I'm
of that opinion.
I understand. Well, Len, before you continue, I understand where you're coming from. I understand your concerns. And track record is important to take into consideration when you evaluate a player. But in fairness, none of these players have lined up next to one another in a situation where defensive linemen are coming at them, in a real-life situation where the pads are on. And I'm not trying to build up the laundry list of excuses, but before we take the concerns and we all of a sudden hit the panic button, let's see what training camp is all about. And let's see whether or not Marshall Newhouse is able to adjust to what the Giants expect out of him. You're right. Things are not necessarily going according to schedule, because nobody anticipated that Will Beatty was going to tear his pectoral muscle.
Yeah.
So that all of a sudden throws a curveball. Nobody's denying that. And that's why then maybe you're right. Somebody that was supposed to provide versatility and depth all of a sudden needs to be called on to be a starter. But until we see these players compete next to one another in training camp, it's hard to all of a sudden say, well, this is what happened in Green Bay. This is what happened in Cincinnati. So that means it's automatically going to happen again with the Giants. Let's see what happens with a little bit more live bullets, live action.
I think there will be a NFL caliber offensive line starter
on that Sunday night in Dallas, but it won't be anybody who's on this roster right now, Lance.
Well, but Len, when are you? Let me ask you this. When are you bringing in that offensive lineman that you're envisioning, who's going to be a polished veteran and is going to be ready for Week One? When are you bringing that in? When is that guy going to be dangling out on the market for you to grab? Answer that question for me first.
When are we going to get that guy? Let's talk about avenues to get that guy. All right.
Well, what are the avenues?
It may be somebody who is. Already out there and hasn't signed. How about Blaylock
retired.
I think you said the other day he retired.
Correct.
Did you say he retired?
Cross him off your wish list.
Okay.
He's not in existence.
And the caller who called in early and talked about trade. And Evan Mathis is sitting out there. There are avenues to bring in a fifth guy, Lance. I think that Sunday night there will be an NFL-caliber starter along this offensive line, and it won't be a guy who's on this roster. I don't think it'll be a guy who will be on this roster. Let me ask you a quick question about Beatty and Ayers. If you can answer this question, guys, did they have surgery, or are we letting nature take its course with the pectoral injury?
No, Beatty had surgery. He actually had surgery the day after he suffered the injury.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. I thought maybe they were just sitting there and letting...
No, not at all. Robert Ayers was the same thing. They had to go under the knife. That's why they were done for the season. Not Beatty, but Ayers. I'm using him as an example. Ayers was very productive last year. He was out because he suffered the same injury.
Okay, I wasn't challenging what somebody had said. I was just curious whether or not they had surgery on the pectorals.
Are you studying at medical school? Are you doing a little survey on the side that we're unsure of? It seems like you're taking notes here.
Probably there's nobody else in the world who cares about this, but I was just curious of whether or not they actually had surgery or whether we were letting nature take its course. And I'm not suggesting that one is better than the other. That's why I threw it out to you.
I didn't know maybe you had some medical expertise that we weren't aware of. That's why I just wanted to hear what your thoughts were. So.
I would like to tell Anita that I played golf yesterday and my left shoulder is bothering me a little bit. I'm trying to figure out whether or not, three ibuprofen would cure that, Anita. I'm not sure what I should do about that. But, no, I have no medical experience at all. Although a member of my family is a doctor, and the best advice I can get from them is to see my doctor.
That's always good advice, to let the professionals take care of business. Like,
let me ask you one more question. And to tell you the truth, I forgot what that question was. I was working too hard to be funny, Lance, and I forgot what the last question is. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Not a problem, Len. Listen, good hearing from you. Again. We'll speak later down the road.
I know whenever Lynn is on, it's always dire. It's always, I wish Lynn would just be a little bit more positive when he calls in. The Giants are very aware of the situation at the offensive line position. We couldn't have anticipated the injury to Beatty. Sorry, you just couldn't, I don't think it's over here yet. I do believe the Giants are going to make some moves. I do believe that, and I don't know if it's Mathis. I don't know if it's Jake Long. I don't know if it's going to be another offensive lineman that's going to be cut at one point in time during a training camp when of course, rosters have to be shaved. But I don't think the Giants are done here. And so I'm not losing sleep over it yet. I'm really not.
The process never ends. It never ends even once you get to week one, Anita. Your 53-man roster is not solidified for what's going to happen come December. Changes happen left and right throughout the course of the season. We certainly appreciate all the phone calls and all the tweets. I want to close out the show, though, with a number of tweets, a number of people who didn't have an opportunity to pick up the phone certainly weighing in. Giants Nation at Big Blue Beckham. I believe Landon Collins and Michael Thompson are your starters at safety. That's interesting. Nat might have packages if he's healthy, but we just don't know his health yet. And right now we don't know his health, but the goal is that he will be ready to go in training camp. It's not as if there is a big issue in terms of the severity department when it comes to his calf injury. So the expectation is he will be out there for training camp. But Michael Thompson, just to bring him into the conversation, coaches have been very happy about his progress. Tom Coughlin, right as minicamp ended, was actually asked about Michael Thompson and said it was unfortunate that he had to deal with that strained hamstring the final day of minicamp. That's why he wasn't able to practice. But he has certainly looked good when his number has been called. within that. Let's take a look at a few more.
Yeah, but are you how confident or how yeah how confident are you to have two rookies?
Well, I'm not saying he's going to start.
No.
I'm just saying that he's looked good though.
Yeah.
During the work that he's got.
But I thought we saw some tweets in regard to both rookies starting. I don't.
Well, yeah, the one that I just read is laying out that he could see both starters being rookies.
Yeah, I don't.
I would assume especially, that we're going to have a veteran
especially,
and a rookie.
Especially in this system. No way.
It would be a surprise if there are two rookies starting at safety. But at this point, with so much youth, because keep in mind, Anita, when we say that there are players that have been in the league for a few years, Cooper Taylor's been banged up, barely has any games under his belt. Nat Burhe was a rookie last year. You know, Josh Gordy is the veteran of the group. If we're going to put the safety group in perspective, Josh Gordy is your veteran. Everybody else, as far as I'm concerned, is youthful, can fall into the category young and doesn't have a great deal of experience under their belt, whether you're year one, year two, year three. Josh Gordy is the one player that has been there and has done that, at least at that position. He's also played corner during the course of his career. Let's take a look at one or two more tweets before we call it a program. This is a question about the receiving core, Anita. This comes from 300 O'Block at Savage_Life69. Can and will Beckham, Randall, Cruz combined for 3,000 receiving yards in 2015.
Wow. I don't know. And really, the big question mark here is Shane Vereen. Shane Vereen, what type of role does he play in this passing attack? I think it's going to be a big one. I think it's going to take away targets from both those wide receivers. It's going to keep defenses honest. And on top of that, listen, this is a big year for Reuben Randall. This really is a big year for Reuben Randall. And so with Reuben Randall and Shane Vereen, I don't know. I'm sure they could athletically do it with Victor Cruz being healthy. I just don't know with so many targets and so many weapons. And I would imagine that Eli wanting to spread the wealth around, I just don't know if they'll have an opportunity to put up those type of numbers.
Well, Randall is going to have opportunities this season. But if you look at his numbers last year, he had just over 70 receptions. He had just under 1,000 yards. Now, he did that with Victor Cruz missing 10 games and Odell Beckham missing 4. Now, with both of those players, you're under the assumption, let's say everybody's on the field for 16 games, do perhaps the targets go down a little? You'd assume yes, which means it may be tougher to get back to that 930 barometer. I would say they're capable of getting over 2,000 combined with certainty. 3,000 may be very difficult to do, at least as you evaluate how the offense is going to play out. One last question, one last tweet I want to throw out here before we wrap up. This is related to Brett Jones, who we were talking about earlier in the program, Anita. Ben at BigBen_Z. Brett Jones is an interesting prospect. Does the best offensive lineman in the CFL have a comparison correlation to NFL talent? It's a great question. Nobody comes to mind. I was actually trying to find the list of all the CFL players that have transitioned to the NFL, and most of them are actually wide receivers, running backs, and quarterbacks.
I was just going to say quarterbacks.
Yeah, we have not seen a number of offensive linemen. So to give you another example, right now would be virtually impossible. A type of player, I mean, you have to go to the equivalent of probably like a rookie or a second-year offensive lineman just because of the transitional differences that you need to take into consideration.
Yeah, I mean, it's a much different game. I mean, even to the size or really the width of the field. How that translates, I think really you hit the nail on the head in regard to the proximity of where the defensive line can line up. That's going to be a learning curve for him.
As it will be for a number of other young players, and that's exactly what the theme of today's show was. Appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. Big Blue Kickoff live with you each and every weekday at noon Eastern. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. We'll speak to you next week. Have a good one.